You're listening to Chris Carlin on 98.7 ESPN.
We are going to cover quite a bit tonight, including why Rob Manfred hates baseball and doesn't care about fans, about why NBA players are maybe not quite as excited to get back as we thought they were. But we begin tonight, how could I forget, a Friday night edition of Beat the Fat Man at 9 o'clock. I don't know. I'm sorry. I was a little thrown off there by forgetting at first. But, of course, that's coming up later on tonight off of a brutal loss the other night. At any rate, we begin tonight with this idea that we are fully headed in the right direction on COVID-19. I don't want to be an alarmist, but just reading up on some of the stuff that's been going on in terms of COVID, its growth, and where it is right now, and where we are with some of these sports at the moment, it's got me concerned, and I'm not the only one. First of all, let's talk about where it's a problem. Thankfully, here in the tri-state area, in New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut, and in places like Illinois and Wisconsin, because of our extreme measures over the last few months, we are trending in a very positive direction. Where you look, though, where there are big problems is everywhere else. You know, there are some states where things are going okay. Hopefully they're starting to make some progress. But there are a whole boatload of states that maybe didn't necessarily get hit hard early, didn't necessarily take it all that seriously early, and they are seeing their cases beginning to spike. And those states are all very much big parts of sports returning, primarily Florida, Texas, and California, which are starting to see their highest numbers overall right now. We understand that Florida is going to be the hub for the NBA to return. We understand that Texas was going to be a big part of MLB potentially returning. Yes, that they were going to have quite a bit of, they weren't going to have hub cities, but they were going to do this regionally. And of course, California and the entire West Coast is seeing things move upward in terms of COVID-19. So while we can sit here and talk about who's affected and who's not, and younger people aren't, and who is really not that bothered by it, and it's all older people and such, it's not true the way things have trended. And I think we all just need to take a quicker look at this, maybe a more detailed look at this than quicker, excuse me, and understand that this is not getting much better outside of our area where we have done what we have needed to do because we got hammered so hard so early. That's why we're headed in the right direction. And it feels like some of these other states right now are starting to get hit hard as they weren't before because they weren't taking it all that seriously. I talked to a couple of people down in Florida today, and they're New Yorkers who are hanging out in Florida during all of this, and they're annoyed by what's going on by people down in that state who have treated it like nothing is a problem. We have seen the shots on the beaches and all that, but just in terms overall, they have really not treated it with any great seriousness. I'm going to tweet out a map here in a minute, and I am certainly not a doctor. I had two doctors in the family. I worked at a pharmacy, so I'm almost a doctor. Jokingly so. I'm going to tweet out this map that was tweeted out by the governor of New Jersey earlier today from a group of independent scientists and doctors. And it shows you where things are on the climb and where things are headed in the right direction. There are only five states where it's going right, and we're one of them. Whether you're in New York, New Jersey, or Connecticut, you're one of them. The other two are Illinois and Wisconsin. So do I want sports to not come back? Of course not. Do I want to not rush this? Well, we have talked about this from the beginning, and, you know, shame on me. When we got into late April and everybody was working on their plans for coming back, it really felt like we were just rushing this entirely too fast. But once we got into late May and into early June, and we were really seeing very positive effects around this area, around the area that we had been most concerned about as a country, you started to believe that, okay, we might be really headed in the right direction here, and if we're doing everything correctly, we can get back. Well, what is that going to entail? You listen to people involved with the NBA. You listen to people with the players right now, and they're just starting to realize what that's going to entail. They're just starting to realize that they are going to be, in essence, on lockdown for at least a month and a half. The league put out numbers last night saying that 14 of the 22 teams will be done after 53 days. And that was their way of making those players who might have been on those fringe teams, who are not thinking all that seriously about coming back, maybe helping to them to reconsider coming back. Whether you're a Spencer Dinwiddie on the Nets, just as an example, or players like that, or, frankly, somebody who has expressed concern about it, Carmelo Anthony with the Portland Trailblazers. It was put out to make those teams and those players feel better about the situation. But then you find out that down in Orlando, that the people who are working in and around all of these players who are going to be in the bubble, as we call it now, are going to be going in and out, and they're not going to be subject to the same things that players and staff and broadcasters and everybody like that is. And they're going to be interacting with players every day, quite easily, possibly, introducing the virus into that atmosphere. And then NBA players also have other concerns with everything that's gone on from a racial standpoint in this country lately. How do they handle that? Does that get more traction? Do they show more power in what they're doing in their protest by not playing? Or do they show it in protesting and playing together? Taylor Rooks was on earlier today with Michael K., Don, and Peter. And Taylor is plugged into the NBA. You used to know her from SNY. She's at Bleacher Report now. And does a fantastic job covering the league. And Taylor popped on with just the news angle of it, where she broke that a lot of players right now are thinking twice, and there are significant Zoom calls that are going on potentially as we speak. There's a big one tonight with 150 players getting together and trying to decide collectively what they're going to do. So what led to the NBA player call about returning to Disney World?
This is really an accumulation of a bunch of things. I think, to be completely honest, players were hesitant about the season coming back at all. This has been a growing conversation. So at first, players didn't even know if they wanted the NBA season to come back, I mean, weeks ago. Then when they see the proposal about this plan, some feel as though their voice wasn't heard about the plan. And then some feel like the plan has a lot of holes in it, both literally and figuratively. And then now with all of this racial tension, they feel like the optics of returning to play basketball when there are so many other things going on just wouldn't be right.
So there you go. There are a few different issues there for NBA players, and potentially the biggest one, there's obviously the racial tension issue and how they want to handle that, but there's the health issue. That may be number one overall, and when you hear what some of the problems are with the plan, it makes you think that maybe there's a little rethink that needs to happen here. And then there's even the NFL. John Harbaugh on 105.7, The Fan, down in Baltimore, talking about everything that has to be done right now just to get some work in. Take a listen to this.
I've seen all the memos on that, and to be quite honest with you, it's impossible what they're asking us to do. Humanly impossible. So, you know, we're going to do everything we can do. We're going to space. We're going to have masks. But, you know, this is a communication sport. So we want to get out there and actually have any idea about what we're doing on the field. We've got to be able to communicate with each other in person. We have to practice, and I'm pretty sure the huddle's not going to be 6 feet spaced. So, you know, So, you know, I don't know. Our guy's going to shower one at a time all day. Our guy's going to lift weights one at a time all day.
Right.
These are things the league and the PA needs to get a handle on and needs to get agreed with some common sense. So we can operate in the 13-hour day in training camp that they're giving us to get our work done. So that's the one thing you can tell by my voice.
Yeah.
I'm a little frustrated with what I'm hearing there.
Right.
And I think they need to get that pinned down a little better.
And John Harbaugh is the more level-headed of the two Harbaughs, clearly. And when you hear him talk the way he is, it comes across that these guys are not fully understanding everything that's being asked, and now that some players, meaning the leagues and such, how difficult it is, the Players Association as well, for these teams to function. And now you're having some players, and somewhat shame on them, actually realize that they are going to be going into lockdown here and not wanting to deal with it. It might be time to rethink everything here and to just take a step back before we try to rush back.
You're listening to Chris Carlin on 98.7 ESPN.
By all means, feel free to reach out through the social media. Who knows? Maybe we'll even throw in an Instagram Live tonight at That Guy Carlin over on Instagram. But the overall point here is these players, for instance, in baseball, they're being asked to sign the waiver that will not hold baseball responsible if they end up getting COVID-19. Does that feel like the health and safety of the players is first and foremost in your mind? It's a little bit sketchy, no? Yeah, I'm kind of thinking that it is. Let's hit the phones, 800-919-3776. Steve in Montville will start us off tonight. Steve, what do you got?
Have you heard of Chris Carlin? He's a big fish, like a tuna or a marlin. He's a man of many talents, keeping it all in perfect balance. He can talk about Tim Tuffle or even quote you a good price for a truffle. A man for all seasons, he knows all the alibis, he knows all the reasons. He does his job. Tough questions, no gimmies, no lobs. So turn him on at 7. I swear, it'll be like Twinkie heaven.
Wow. Steve, you have a lot of time on your hands, don't you?
I certainly do, Carlin. Yes, I do.
What the hell was that? I mean, on a Law and Order, Steve. It wouldn't kill you.
Wait a second.
CSI is on all day. That's a better way of spending your time.
You don't appreciate me, Carlin.
I didn't say that.
Okay.
Of course, I appreciate you. I'm just more worried about you than anything.
No, I'm okay. It's not the whole day I do this. But, you know, I got my pencil. I got my paper. I doodle, you know?
Okay. Yeah, that was something. How you doing, brother? What do you want to talk about?
I want to talk about last night's Carlin Chronicles, if I can. Is that possible?
You can. It's not on the board, but fire away.
Okay. Frank, right? He didn't even offer to let you stay over his house that night?
No.
No? Why?
I don't know. The car was waiting, and he got in the car and went.
I mean, was this marriage number one or marriage number two or in between?
For who?
What's that?
For who? For me? I've only been married number one.
No. Frank's marriage.
I'm not going to divulge any more information that may indicate which of the two hosts it was. So
okay,
I don't think that's fair to give away all these hints like that.
Okay, but, I appreciate that.
Now, listen, honestly, I wanted to be in my own bed anyway. So it's not but you know, I'm not going to lie. An offer would have been nice.
Yeah.
You know, Fred checked in, made sure I was okay.
Oh, all right. You know, that's okay.
You know what I mean? Like, Fred didn't blow me off.
Oh, okay. Like, it was unclear. At least to me, it was unclear.
No, Fred yelled, "Hey, you okay? You good? Get home?" And I'm like, Don't worry about it. I mean, they had already flown me home on this private jet.
Okay, so I thought Fred said that. Ah, see, that's the problem.
What do you mean that you thought Fred said what?
Fred said, are you okay?
He did.
But Frank said also.
No, Frank left.
Oh, okay.
I told you, Frank was on the Southern State by the time.
Right. Like yeah. I said, and I just thought Frank would have said, come on, Carlin, stay at my house on the couch. But, I understand.
No. But that's okay.
Okay.
Anyway.
All right. That's about it.
That's it. Hey, okay. Good talk. All right, Stevie. Wow. Joel, as we start the show tonight, I want to bring in Joel Pollack for a moment. Because I feel like out of the gate, and what we've seen the last few nights, there has been an inordinate amount of love from the callers. And don't get me wrong, I love you all so much. I really do. But something's going on here, Joel.
We've learned that 3 months at home is just too much time on your hands with sports talk radio.
Is it too much time on my hands or on their hands?
I think both. I think we've all gotten to that point where we've just hit a little bit of silly.
Well, the Carlin Chronicles, it's just my way. It's not, ridiculing anything, unless it's myself. It's really just my way of telling an entertaining story and not wanting to offend and being honest about what happened in the story. But at the same time, just, hey, here's something that I got to experience that was weird. So, yes, I might have a little too much time on my hands, but I was headed in my direction of doing this anyway. I'm more concerned about the listener at this point. I mean, we just had a poem in homage to me to start the show. Please analyze.
We also had kind of one, last night with the food analogies as well. Like, man, your listeners are loyal. Like, they really care for you, but they need to get something better to do with their lives.
Yeah, they really do. And I love you guys. You know I do. 800-919-3776. By all means, call up. Joe and Colonius next on 9870. Joel.
Hey, Chris, thanks for taking my call. I'd like to start off with a little poem myself. There once was a man friend named Tucket. I'm only kidding. I won't go any further. No, but what I want to bring up is I don't think they should play any sports this year. And the reason I say that is, I mean, if you've been locked up in your house for 3 months, are you going to sit there and watch a baseball game? Are you going to, if you have the choice to go to an amusement park, a water park, or the beach, you're going to do that. Sitting in your house for 3 months, I'm a big baseball fan, but at this point, I'm not missing it. Because once
I think you're in the minority when you say that. I do. For instance, now look, I'm not somebody that is overly cautious, just in general. I mean, I have always, washed my hands and all that appropriately, but I'm not overly cautious to not go and do something. Right now, like if you wanted to get me to go to Great Adventure in New Jersey, we'd have to talk about it, and I'd have to know what was going on there.
I'm not saying right now, but like they're talking baseball in July, middle of July, end of July.
Yeah.
By then. If baseball, we could play baseball, but you can't go to the game. But if you had a choice where you could go to a water park or, an amusement park, are you going to sit home and watch a game or are you going to go out with the family?
I would say more than anything, I'm probably going to go out with the family, but I'm going to watch. I'm going to be entertained by it because I want to see it. I do want to see it as long as it's safe for those guys to be out there.
Well, I want to see it too, but this is going to sound crazy, but I don't want to be force-fed something that isn't going to be quality. I just can't see how baseball is going to work out. I just don't see how it's
50 games they're talking about right now, or 75. I forgot what they were talking about.
Today was the latest, was 72. It's going to end up being 50. Because
50, but do you think that's really
I don't think it's
quality?
Good. No, I don't. It's not even that it's quality. It's not representative of a season, and thanks for the call. But it is, more than anything else, a distraction. And look, I can't sit here and tell you that we're all going to be pinned inside all summer long. Clearly, the tri-state area is moving in the right direction. However, when you look at everywhere else and you look at the beaches, is everybody going to run to the beaches and jam them as usual and not have any masks on and all that? I'm sure there will be plenty of people down there, but I'm saying I wouldn't be one of them quite yet. I want to go to the beach. I don't want to go hang out at the shore. I absolutely do. Right now, I'm just more concerned about taking my time to do that. You know, I get it, but kind of what you're talking about, people rushing to want to go out and do stuff, I get that. But let's not all do that too soon, because that's where we get into trouble here, and then it turns the other way. The idea behind rushing back puts us in a position where all the work that we've done for 3 months can go for naught if you see another spike. And that's, can we agree, that's the last thing we need. That's the absolute last thing we need. So let these other states go through what they have to go through. Hopefully, they smarten up and do the right things here and understand that a disease is not trying to suppress you, that it's more about staying healthy. And my voice cracked there. Healthy. It's more about staying healthy and going and just doing the right thing. It's not that hard. It's not that hard.
You're listening to Chris Carlin on 98.7 ESPN.
Myles Garrett, you'll remember, was the number one overall pick in the 2017 NFL draft. He, of course, had his incident this past year with the Steelers game and Mason Rudolph. It leaked out that he had thought that Mason Rudolph used a racial epithet, and we all know what happened from there. He was suspended for the rest of the year. So Miles, not because of the racial epithet, but because of obviously the fact that he swung his helmet and was using it as a weapon. Miles Garrett has started 35 games and played in 37 overall in three seasons. Played 11 his first year, played all 16 in 2018, and 10 games in 2019. He has 30 and a half career sacks already. Double-digit sacks each of the last 2 years, including the year this season where he only played in 10 games. They're talking about a mega deal. Okay. He and the Browns, after year three, talking about that. Jamal Adams, also known as President Maul on IG, posting a comment in the section below. As they should, well-deserved MG with a fist emoji. I can't even get my first proposal that they said they would send over in January. I was called, quote, selfish, though, LOL. A lot of talk, no action. Hashtag stay woke. All right, I don't get the stay woke part of it. You know, okay. Jamal Adams has just got to dial it back. Okay. Look at this logistically. Jamal's a great player. There's no getting around that. He plays safety. They ask him to do a lot of different things. He had 6.5 sacks this last season. He is the best player on the Jets. And as we talked about with Rich Cimini several weeks ago, when the Jets said they don't want to talk to him about an extension before the season, we obviously knew that it was going to get uglier, and here it has. I can't even get my first proposal that they said they would send over in January. I was called selfish, though. LOL, a lot of talk, no action. Myles Garrett is a defensive end and an elite one at that. It is a position in the game of incredible value and one that you do not screw around with when you have an elite player at the position. It can completely wreck a game for you. It absolutely can. It is the second most important position in the league, maybe the third. It might be 2 and 2A between the left tackle and the elite pass rushing defensive end. That's what Myles Garrett is, an elite pass rushing defensive end. Meanwhile, when you look at safeties in the league, it is not a position that gets paid traditionally big money anymore. With every comment, with every little slight, I begin to believe more and more that eventually it's going to come to a head and he's going to get traded. And it may have to come to that. Jamal is clearly a player, as many players are, and understandably so, who is motivated by negative criticism of them, who is motivated by the person that says, the one person that says, you stink, you can't do this, you can't cover, you're not very good, blah, blah, blah. Constantly motivated by that. I understand that. We've had so many great players over the years that have been motivated by that very thing. And they take the slightest, the tiniest perceived slight, like we just saw with Michael Jordan, and they turn it into incredible drive. Jamal does that, but it's starting to get to be where he gets in his own way. And this is getting in your own way. This is putting it out there publicly. You know that everybody is going to see your response, and now you've just laid low for a few weeks for this to happen. You're upset. Okay, I understand. Paying a player at that position after 3 years, it's just not great business. It's not. He's an elite player at the position, but when you look at where the Jets' finances are right now, did it ever occur to Jamal that he might be better served waiting another year when they can get a situation where they can potentially have a pay cut for someone like C.J. Mosley, or an out-and-out release of C.J. Mosley and save some more money, where Jamal can get the money of a top-paid safety in the league after year four as opposed to after year three? This is why they have the fifth-year option. At the very worst, in that fifth year, you're going to be paid the average of the top 10 safeties in the game. If it even came to that. Everybody wants to get as much money as they can as quickly as possible. And I understand that in the National Football League. And 90% of the time, 90%, I will agree with the player trying to get as much as they can. I get it. And if they want to voice it publicly, they feel like that's the most effective way to do it, by all means, go right ahead. I don't know that it's going to help Jamal in this situation. It's not helping when you want to go and voice how ticked off you are about not getting the money that you want right now because you played at a great level. Okay, there are still questions about the coverage, if we're going to be honest about it. And it is a position where teams can now not afford to spend that amount of money, especially when they're still paying for the sins of Mike Maccagnan by paying a middle linebacker $17 million a year. Now, if the Jets told Jamal he was getting a proposal in January and he didn't, that's not right. Obviously, it's not right. You have to deal on the up and up. But the indications right now, from what we've heard all along, was They didn't want to talk about it until after the draft, and then they told him they didn't want to talk about a new deal until next year. It might just have something to do with where they are financially, Jamal, with the jail that Mike Maccagnan has put them in terms of their salary cap and where some of the money is tied up. And they also may be not wanting to set a precedent of paying players after 3 years. But don't for a minute compare yourself to Myles Garrett. You're not. You're not Myles Garrett. You're a great player. You are not as important to a football team as an elite-level pass rusher is, period. That's just fact.
You're listening to Chris Carlin on 98.7 ESPN.
Somebody in the middle of a labor dispute, one in which I have really not taken sides. I have blamed both sides equally. It's amazing for one side to win me over because the guy on the other side just is absolutely uncaring and unmoving. And yes, a merciless negotiator in a lot of ways, that's a good thing. But just acting like anybody who challenges anything he says is just so out of their minds and they're so stupid and they don't know what they're talking about. Let's be clear, okay? The newest proposal from the owners that calls for, what, 72 games and a guaranteed 70% of the pro rata, or rata, whatever it is exactly the same as having 48 games at 100% pro rata. Do the math. It actually comes out exactly the same. And it can go up if they have postseason, if they have this, if they have that. And the players are not backing off the pro rata. And at this point, you know what? I'm with the players. Because the offers that baseball has put out there have just been dressed up in different ways, but they've all been the exact same offer. They have been. They have been 50% at 80 games, 70% at 72 games. You know, Rob Manfred's brilliant. He's incredibly smart. He was part of the negotiating teams on other collective bargaining agreements before he ever became the commissioner. But now, when they want to present that they are giving you better deals incrementally, they're really not. They are giving you the same deal, just dressed differently, so that the numbers can make the public think that they are really trying to make an effort. They're not. They're not. They want to play 50 games. They want to not be the bad guy. And they want to get what they can get in terms of the money, because they have to play without fans. And you know what? They knew back in March that there was a strong possibility they were going to have to play without fans, and they got one over on Tony Clark in saying in that deal that they had the right to renegotiate it. Tony Clark has just been absolutely steamrolled in the last CBA, now in this, while the owners are asking for help. Every day that passes, let's be clear, makes it easier on the owners. Less games we got to play. And we can look better and better to the fans because the players won't take the deal. Even though we keep offering them the same deal, it just looks differently. It's a big shell game right now. They have absolutely nothing to lose. And I keep going back to this, and I know it's just language wording, okay? But good faith negotiation. The owners screamed and yelled about good faith negotiations in that March 26th agreement. There has not been one bit of good faith negotiating from the owners, period. There hasn't. Not in the least. Players at least have made clear we're staying on the pro rata because that's what the deal was, even though our head agreed to do something else. The lack of good faith on the other side is simply in this, that you can try to present something, an offer, as if it's better than it actually is, and you keep changing the numbers to make it look that way, but when you actually do the math, and it's not that hard to do, it's all the same. And one group has a lot more money than the other group does. And don't forget, Major League Baseball also has their central fund. We don't know how much is in it. We can't tell you for a minute how it helps, but we know that when the Wilpons needed $25 million, it was there for them. So if teams need money, I'm sure they can borrow out of the central fund if they have to. We don't know how much is there. It's not empty. That I can guarantee you. That I can guarantee you. So they have an incredible fail-safe at their disposal right now. And that is the ability to just implement the season whenever they say fit. Is an owner going to lose a team over this year? I really want to know that. If things are in such remarkable peril, do you have one team right now with an owner that is in real danger of losing his team? Because if so, that owner shouldn't be an owner. Do you have two? Do you have three? Okay. They all shouldn't be owners. Now, if we're talking about 15 or 10, that's different. Has anybody asked that question? You know, Rob, if we don't have a year this year, are any of your owners going to lose their team because they haven't been able to do this? They haven't been able to make it work? And why won't you open the books to go with good faith negotiations? The union has bad leadership. Okay, Tony Clark made this agreement, and it was a bad one. And I'm sure they're annoyed, and they should be, that it was made. And if I were the union, once this gets resolved, I would want to make a change before the real negotiation next year. You know what I would do? I'd call Donald Fehr over at the NHL Players Association. What do we got to do to get you back? Because we need you in the worst way. If you're the players right now, they need you in the worst way. He and Gene Orza were excellent at the job. Excellent. I would absolutely look into that. Because Tony Clark's a nice guy and all, but he has not been any match here for Rob Manfred. And Manfred is just a steamroller. A steamroller. There's no negotiation that isn't a win for him. And look, he's great at his job because of it. But there's never a look at the bigger picture of what might be better in the moment. And that includes right now. And can we all admit there's a little bit of a soulless factor to that? Can we admit that? There absolutely is. I reached out to a couple of different agents today, and it's a similar refrain that you get from them. This is not a CBA negotiation. It's MLB asking players for help. MLB has never proven any of the financial projections that they have or have never opened the books for anybody, even an independent person. And the players are taking all the risks from a health standpoint. That's what they feel like right now. And if there is going to be any kind of a season, they feel like they should not be asked to take the hit. That the owners, when they do well, don't kick in extra money. It's understandable. But you guys gotta, you know, I understand that we all want to point to players and point to the numbers they're making and just say they're playing a game. These uber wealthy owners, uber wealthy. Top 0.1% of 1%. These guys are the ones that have teams. And when they're crying poverty, dear God, make it stop. Make it stop. They didn't get that way by not being cheap. They got that way by being cheap and being ruthless. And generally speaking, to get to the top 0.1% of 1% in the country, you have to have screwed some people over along the way. It's Carlin, 800-919-3776. Calls, open lines, let's hit them. When we come back on the baseball, on Jamal Adams, not happy again and voicing it again. And on the fact that the NBA players are having a Zoom call tonight, 150 of them getting together to discuss what their unified front on all of the situations going on might be, whether it be from a health standpoint, from a logistical standpoint, and from the racial tension standpoint. It may come that, don't rule out, the players just decide because of this they don't want to play. Don't rule it out.
You're listening to Chris Carlin on 98.7 ESPN.
So let's get to it and figure out who we're dealing with here. Mike in Bloomfield. What's up, Mike?
What's going on, Chris? How are you? Great show.
Thank you. Why should you get your chance tonight, Mike?
Because I love you. I'm a huge TV fan, and I'm ready to take down the fat man.
All right, hang on. Aaron on Long Island. Aaron, how are you?
Hi, how are you?
Good. Aaron, have you called in before?
No, never. This is my first time.
Okay. You know TV pretty well, do you?
Yeah, I think I do.
Okay. There's a quiet confidence. There's a confident tone in your voice right now.
Thank you.
Hang on. Mark in Westchester. Feeling lucky
tonight?
Hey,
how are you?
Feeling lucky tonight, punk?
You betcha. Bring it on.
What qualifies you for this?
I'm working all night long into the morning, and I need distractions.
All right, that's fair. Hang on. Courtney in Westwood is next. Courtney, what's going on?
Hanging in there, sir. How are you?
I'm good. So, why do you deserve it?
Because I almost had you the last time.
Oh, you had a chance already, didn't you?
I had a shot. I had a shot, and I stumbled on the Big Bang Theory. Hate that shit.
All right, hang on, Courtney. We may have to let him go. It might be a little bit soon for him. Dunny in Freehold is next. Hello, Dunny.
What's going on, Chris?
How are you, Dunny?
I'm doing well, but I got a bone to pick with you.
What's that?
Sometime in a previous life, I think Charles Haley sent me from Dallas Cowboys fandom to get redemption. And you know what I'm talking about. And I'm here for Charles Haley.
I thought Charles Haley was going to kill me. That happened because I got mad at Charles Haley for something. That's another story. But you know what? I'll write that down for the Carlin Chronicles. The time that Charles Haley was about to kill me, literally.
He sent me back to get you.
Hang on. That's a blast from the past. Finally, Rick in Orange County. Rick, what's going on?
Why do I deserve it?
Yeah, that's right.
You're supposed to ask me that question.
Well, I think you just asked it yourself.
Okay, good. Why do I deserve it? Because I usually go out for my run around 7 o'clock. And I know the word run is foreign to you. But anyway, that's another
point. Wow. Okay.
I was listening to JJ for the last couple of weeks, and I just got so tired of that voice.
Strike two.
I switched to you, and I'm enjoying you a lot more than I am, JJ.
Well, I mean, okay, that's nice, but I mean, the fat joke and listening to the competitor for a while. All right, but you've come around on your ways. Hang on. Joel Pollack, your input is welcomed on this situation.
Part of me thinks Rick needs to be put in his place. Mm-hmm. Other part of me wants to give Mark a shot because he's working all night and I understand what that's like.
Mm-hmm.
So why don't we give Mark a shot first?
Okay, and we'll discuss after that.
Yeah.
All right. Mark in Westchester. Have you played
How
the game
you?
Before?
No, this is the first time calling in.
All right. I would remind our other competitors who are online or would-be competitors that you still have an opportunity because we will play twice tonight. So, Mark, you're feeling good. You're a gentleman of what age?
40.
You're 40 years old. Okay. Have you wasted a lot of your life in front of the television?
Yeah, growing up, we didn't have a babysitter. We just had a TV.
Ah, music to my ears. Well, I guess, Mark, you're going to get your first crack. Hit the music! Sometimes you want to go where everybody knows your name.
They're calling again.
Is your brain rotting with useless TV knowledge? Do you want to put your quarantine brain to goodish use? It's time to play Beat the Fat Man.
If you're new to our game, allow me to introduce you to Joel Pollack. He's our host.
All
Joel,
right.
Good evening.
How you doing, Chris?
I'm outstanding. Joel, explain the rules.
All right, here's how the game's going to work, everyone. I'm going to present each of you, you and the contestant, with three questions each. One each from the 80s, 90s, and 2000s television. You're each going to have 10 seconds to answer that question. Now, whoever gets the most questions right is our winner. Now, if the score is tied after three rounds, we're going to overtime. And the first one of you guys to win a round is going to be our winner. Contestant gets the question first. Chris goes in isolation during that time. And we're ready to go as soon as you are.
I'm oddly nervous.
Interesting. Huh. I wonder if that's going to make you sharper or if you're going to turn to a diamond under pressure.
Well, only one way to find out, Mark in Westchester.
You ready to go, Mark?
Smelling blood in the water. Let's do this.
All right, Chris.
Buckle up, cowboy.
To isolation you go. All right, Mark, here we go. First question from the 80s. In what city does the show Matlock take place?
Ooh, New York City.
Ooh, good guess. I'm sorry, that's not correct. Let's see if Chris can get it. Hiya, Chris.
Uh-huh.
In what city does the TV show Matlock take place?
Oh, wow.
That sounds kind of stumped.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm not 112 years old, so...
Hey, that's late 80s, early 90s.
Yeah, it's still... Well, I would have been 88 at that point to watch the show. I would say that it's St. Louis, Missouri. I don't know.
Mark got it wrong also. The answer is Atlanta.
Atlanta. Matlock?
Matlock.
I mean, no offense, and I'm Catholic. Why don't we just give me 700 club questions? I mean, I might have a better chance at that. Matlock! Matlock!
I can't even watch that.
They can't all be cake.
I mean, Andy Griffith in a seersucker suit. None of us are on board unless we're 98 years old. I mean, come on.
It was a very, very popular show.
Is this a Giselle? Not among anybody under the age of 75. Is this a Giselle Hernandez evening?
This one is not a Giselle vehicle, actually.
Who is it?
This one's me.
Joel.
Oh, that's right.
Joel. Wow.
Yep.
If this is our start... I mean, you know, listen, and I think Mark would agree with me on this. Mark, a Matlock question?
100%. Like I said, my grandparents didn't even watch that.
Yeah, what was your guess?
I said New York City.
Yeah, I knew it was somewhere, you know, in the Midwest. Or, who cares?
It's
Matlock! Next question!
All right, next one, we'll make this one a little more mainstream for you, but first let's send you to the isolation.
No, just one reasonable. One is a show that anybody, you know, that's still alive would have watched. All right, I've said it.
All right, to the booth you go. All right, Mark, here we go. 90s. What is the name of Scully and Mulder's supervisor on The X-Files?
Oh, man. I'm blanking.
Nothing?
Nothing. Damn.
Fair enough. Let's see if Chris can get it, and let's see if he thinks this one's fair, even. Hi, buddy.
Hi.
Okay, here we go. This one is a Fox vehicle. What is the name of Mulder and Scully's supervisor on The X-Files?
Didn't watch that either.
Oof. Wow.
Mulder and Scully's supervisor, I have no clue.
The answer is Walter Skinner.
Did he get it right?
No, he did not. So we're going into round three with zeros on the board.
I tell you what, I've hit a streak. As much as I did watch television, I was not a sci-fi guy. And there have been a couple of sitcoms that I did not watch, one of which has been Two and a Half Men. I did not watch very much. Anyway.
Yep. All right. Well, let's move on.
0 for 2 here.
0 for 2. And,
but we're still 0 for 2. We're both 0 for 2.
We're both 0 for. So let's see what we can do in round 3. To the booth you go. All right, Mark, you ready?
Yeah.
What is the name of the Master of Disguise private investigator that is used by the Bluth family in Arrested Development?
Oh, man. Say it one more time.
What is the name of the private investigator used by the Bluth family in Arrested Development?
Wow. These are specific, I tell you.
Man, it's trivia. You got to know it.
Yeah. Jesus.
You got nothing?
I got nothing on that one either. Damn.
All right, let's bring Chris in. All right, Chris, your shot at it.
Uh-huh.
What is the name of the Master of Disguise private investigator that is used by the Bluth family in Arrested Development?
Oh! It's Martin Mull. What the hell's his name on the show?
It's tip of your tongue. I can feel it.
Damn it!
Give me something.
Oh! I forget.
The answer is Gene Parmesan.
Oh, yes, Gene Parmesan.
Mark did not get it right, so we're going to overtime.
Oh.
Overtime.
Wow.
This is pathetic.
You're lucky. Yeah, I mean, I should have gotten Gene Parmesan.
I expected you to get that one. The rest of the elements are right up your alley.
Oh, God.
All right, overtime. Let's get you to the booth.
This is atrocious.
All right, Mark, here we go. Overtime. From the TV show Frasier, what city is Daphne Moon originally from?
Ooh. It's not Seattle?
No, I'm sorry. Shit. It's not Seattle.
Sorry.
All right, bringing Chris back in.
Oh, man, now I got it.
He remembers after the fact, of course.
Oh.
Go ahead.
All right. From the TV show Frasier, what city is Daphne Moon originally from?
Manchester.
That is correct.
Damn.
Did I even have to tell you Mark got it wrong? You could hear him over
there. No, I could hear it in his voice. Mark, I mean, listen, let's be
so
fair.
Bad.
You're fortunate it went to OT. I mean, the fact that you got a Matlock question, I mean,
yeah,
it's just an embarrassment. But I should have had Gene Parmesan. I absolutely should have had that. At any rate, Mark, you have to work all night. I'm sorry you didn't win, but we appreciate the efforts that you're doing. What do you do?
I'm a physician.
Oh, wow. Okay. Well, we appreciate all that you do for us, and I hate to tell you that you're a loser anyway. So
I let down my whole physician community.
Exactly. Doctors around the world have dropped everything just to hear this, I'm sure.
I know. Awful.
Mark, thank you
anyway
for taking part, brother, and good luck all night. You know, hopefully keep fighting through. And thank you for all that you're doing, fighting through this right now. Oh, Gene Parmesan, I should have had.
I expected you to get that one.
Yeah, should have had it. It's Martin Mull. I mean, come on. I got to be better than that.
You're circling it.
Yeah, but circling it for me is not, like, this is not a good performance. It's a win, but it's not a good performance.
But I've said it before, a W when you're not at your top, you know, that shows, you know, when you're at the top of your game, nobody's got a chance.
Yeah. I think Manchester is a solid answer to win on.
Oh yeah.
Where Daphne's from. I was making sure in like my initial inclination was Manchester, and then I'm just thinking, all right, don't screw this up, because I rushed an answer the other night and it killed me. Anyway. All right. So here's the deal. One down, one to go. We'll find out who's next. If you, in fact, do have me on a night where you can pick me off, or if I just had a bad round of cards, so to speak, right there, as if I were at the tables. Round two of Beat the Fat Man when we come back.
You're listening to Chris Carlin on 98.7 ESPN.
All right. I'm not feeling great. Who are we going with next, Jill? Who do you want to give a chance to when somebody is at their, not their lowest, but at a pretty low moment?
Well, I'm going to pick somebody, but it has nothing to do with your current position. It's because we actually haven't had a female on to do the show yet. So I'm going to go with Erin.
Okay.
Yeah, so we're going to get Erin up here.
That's not by design. Erin, how are you?
Hi, good. How are you?
Good. So you feel good based on what we've just done that you can beat me, I would assume.
Pretty much.
All right. Well, Erin, let's get to it. Let's not waste any time. Take your shot. Beat the Fat Man.
All right. We'll get right to it and waste no time. Chris, you're going to the booth. All right, Erin, you ready to go?
I'm ready.
Okay. 80s. On Three's Company, what is the name Chrissy short for?
Christmas.
That is correct.
Good job. All right, let's bring Chris in and see if he can match it. Hi, Chris.
Hi.
On Three's Company, what is the name Chrissy short for?
I think it's Christine.
It is not. The answer is Christmas. And Erin got it right.
Oh!
That's okay. Right, Chris. You're trailing early.
Uh-oh. This is a problem.
All right, let's send you back to the booth for question number two.
Uh-oh.
All right, Erin, here we go. On Beverly Hills 90210, where did the Walshes live before they moved to Beverly Hills?
Minnesota.
Nice job. Oh, Chris is going to be in trouble here. Hiya, Chris.
Hi. Everybody's all giggly, I see.
I mean, let's see if you get this question right. On Beverly Hills 90210, where did the Walshes live before they moved to Beverly Hills?
Minnesota.
That's right. And Erin got it right also. So it's 2-1 heading into round three.
Oh, boy.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, boy.
Here we go. Sending
pressure.
You back. There we go. To the booth.
Erin, don't think about it too much.
All right, Erin, here we go. In real life, the character Karen Filippelli from The Office has a legendary American composer and musician for a father. Who is he?
Quincy Jones.
Ooh, Chris is going down, but let's not let him know until he tries this question. Hang tight.
Okay.
Hi, Chris. In real life, the character Karen Filippelli from The Office has a legendary American composer and musician for a father. Who is he?
Quincy Jones.
That's correct, but Erin got it right also.
Oh!
Chris, you lose.
I lost on Christmas.
You lost on Christmas.
Wow. Erin, you came in and kicked my ass. You got all three, and that's impressive. Especially on the Christmas one. I got to hand it to you. I'm really disappointed in myself for not knowing that about Three's Company. I mean, if you would ask me who took over for, Chrissy after she left, I would have had it. What's the bar? It's the Regal Beagle. I mean, anything. And somehow I didn't have Christmas. Erin, a newcomer, comes in, and Joel, let's be honest, that is an impressive performance.
That was. I mean, if you're going to lose, you're going to lose like that. 3-2.
I can live with that loss. I can live with that loss.
Thank
loss.
You.
Well done.
Aaron, thanks, guys. See that you've wasted time like I have, so well done on your part.
Thanks.
Yeah. So you win a rather unsatisfying ESPN gift pack, but it is still a trophy of sorts, because when they ask you, hey, where'd you get that ESPN shirt, you're going to be able to tell them, I beat the fat man.
It was an honor. Thank you.
It was an honor to play against a worthy opponent. Congratulations, Aaron. Well done. Wow.
What a difference those two rounds were.
Yeah, it really was. And, you know, I knew it wasn't Christine. I knew it was something like that. And I, bad job.
More TV. You got to watch more TV, man.
I got to not leave the house more. I didn't know that was possible, but apparently it is.
You're listening to Chris Carlin on 98.7 ESPN.